Rhea, however, did not know that most of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute's scientists, equipment and material, including 7 tons of uranium oxide, had been evacuated to Haigerloch in the Black Forest. But a German bureaucratic mix-up had led to a further consignment being sent to Dahlem instead of Haigerloch. The rush for Dahlem was not to be entirely in vain. There had never been any doubt in the minds of the Nazi leadership that the fight for Berlin would be the climax of the war. The National Socialists, Goebbels had always insisted, will either win together in Berlin or die together in Berlin. Perhaps unaware that he was paraphrasing Karl Marx, he used to declare that whoever possesses Berlin possesses Germany. Stalin, on the other hand, undoubtedly knew the rest of Marx's quote, and whoever controls Germany controls Europe. The American war leaders, however, were clearly unfamiliar with such European dicta. It was perhaps this ignorance of European power politics which provoked Brooke into his uncharitable opinion after a working breakfast with Eisenhower in London on the 6th of March. There is no doubt that he, Eisenhower, is a most attractive personality and at the same time has a very, very limited brain from a strategic point of view. The basic problem, which Brooke did not fully acknowledge, was that the Americans at that stage simply did not view Europe in strategic terms. They had a simple and limited objective: to win the war against Germany quickly, with as few casualties as possible, and then concentrate on Japan. Eisenhower, like his president, the chiefs of staff, and other senior officials, failed to look ahead and completely misread Stalin's character. This exasperated British colleagues and led to the main rift in the Western alliance. Some British officers even referred to Eisenhower's deference to Stalin as "Have a go, Joe," a call used by London prostitutes when soliciting American soldiers. On the 2nd of March, Eisenhower signalled to Major General John R. Dean, the U.S. liaison officer in Moscow, "In view of the great progress of the Soviet offensive, is there likely to be any major change in Soviet plans from those explained to Tedder on the 15th January? He then asked whether there would be a lull in operations mid-March to mid-May. But Dean found it impossible to obtain any reliable information from General Antonov. And when finally they did state their intentions, they deliberately misled Eisenhower to conceal their determination to seize Berlin first." In the difference of views over strategy, personalities unavoidably played a large part. Eisenhower suspected that Montgomery's demands to be allowed to lead a single, full-blooded thrust towards Berlin were prompted solely by prima donna ambitions. Montgomery had done little to conceal his conviction that he should be the field commander, while Eisenhower was left in a figurehead position. Above all, Montgomery's unforgivable boasting after the Ardennes battle had clearly entrenched Eisenhower's bad opinion of him. "His relations with Monty are quite insoluble," Field Marshal Sir Alan Brooke wrote in his diary after that breakfast meeting on the 6th of March. "He only sees the worst side of Monty." Yet the Americans, with some justification, felt that Montgomery would in any case be the worst choice to lead a rapid thrust. He was so notoriously pedantic about staff details that he took longer than any other general to mount an attack. Montgomery's 21st Army Group in the north at Wesel faced the greatest concentration of German troops. He therefore planned a set-piece crossing of the Rhine with large-scale amphibious and airborne operations. But his minutely prepared performance was rather preempted by events further south. Hitler's frenzied reaction to the U.S. First Army's rapidly reinforced bridgehead at Remagen was to order massive counterattacks. This stripped other sectors of the Rhine. Soon, Patton's Third Army, which had been clearing the Palatinate with a panache reminiscent of that local cavalry leader, Prince Rupert, was across the river at a number of points south of Koblenz. Once Montgomery's 21st Army Group had also crossed the Rhine on the morning of the 24th of March, Eisenhower, Churchill and Brooke met on the banks of the river in euphoric mood. Montgomery believed that Eisenhower would allow him to charge northeastwards towards the Baltic coast at Lübeck and perhaps even Berlin. He was soon disabused. General Hodges had been building up the Remagen bridgehead, and Patton, in a remarkably short time, had developed his main bridgehead south of Mainz. Eisenhower ordered them to converge their attacks eastward before Hodge's First Army swung left to encircle the Ruhr from the south. He then, to Montgomery,